Good morning. Thank you for coming. So that was my bio, but as you can see, you know, I'm really just a conduit to all the work that's listed, of all these people that are listed here. I'm not going to read through them all, but it was a group project from the Northeast and Caribbean Injury Prevention Network. Cindy, sort of our NCITN lead, and Holly Hackman did most of the heavy lifting for this project, or a lot of the heavy lifting for the project. So, fortunately, Holly's here, so if there's questions that I don't know, which are probably the case, she will be able to answer those. All right, so just first slide, a little background on the partnership that was developed around firearm safety. Firearm ownership and death rates vary across the Northeast, and these are the states that were part of this project. And you can see the percent of household with firearm. This was from the 2004 BRFSS, which unfortunately was the last one for which they asked about firearms. But it's still, I'm sure, relevant to what's going on today, percent-wise. And we can see Vermont, Maine, and New Hampshire have the highest percent household with guns. So new partnership around firearm was suggested by the Harvard Injury Center, the Northeast and Caribbean Injury Prevention Network, and the New England Injury and Violence Prevention Research Collaborative Initiative. So it started with an all-day conference 2 Octobers back, I believe, was held. And at the conference, there was a lot of discussion, and a data collection tool was developed, to develop an audit of convenience sample of firearm trainings in the Northeast, to sort of get an idea of what's going on. So researchers, Kathy Barber at the Harvard ICRC was sort of the lead on this piece, and initiated a partnership with the Safe Shooting Firearm Educators. Is a network of a couple hundred firearm instructors, largely in the Northeast, who are committed to high standards and safety of firearm training classes. So one of the pieces that you're going to hear today is looking at the firearm injury statistics that are in the Northeast and in the states that are part of this collaborative project. The Harvard Injury Center plans to work with the ICIPN members on developing data fact sheets for use by safe firearm instructors and others. I'm sorry, many of these slides are, I didn't put together, so I'm making sure I do justice to the people that did do the work. So it's going to highlight suicide, homicide, assault, and non-fatal unintentional injuries. It's comparison of state data to region in the U.S. And given the prominence of firearm suicide, the Harvard group developed a brief suicide prevention module to disseminate to the firearm instructors. So the methodology, the data sources are state death, inpatient hospital, and emergency department discharge data. To get the state or the U.S. data for comparison, we use Whiskers, which I'm sure most of you are aware of. Non-fatal U.S. and state-specific data sources are not necessarily directly comparable. There might be some different methodologies on how the data is cut. So the case definition, we use ICD-10 for the death data and ICD-9-CM for the hospital and ED data. Calendar years 2007 through 2011 were used, except for New Hampshire, who did not have some of the later data, and they still used a five-year set of data with 2005 to 2009. If the rates are under 20, it's not presented or based on a count of under 20 due to unstable rates and low numbers. We also excluded deaths in hospital and ED cases. So this is a little different than if those of you that do the state injury indicators for the CDC, death is included in the hospital and ED data. So it was just a minor change just to remove those cases. And we only use state residents, resident deaths anywhere, inpatient, hospital, in-state data. And we looked at intent, and you'll see some of the data soon. These are the codes for those of you who use ICD-9 and ICD-10 codes. They'll look familiar. Now to get into the fun stuff. Well, the other stuff was fun too. So it's a 5-year average annual crude firearm injury death rates in the Northeast. And we can see some differences in sort of the urban and rural differences, where Maine, Vermont, and New Hampshire have the highest death rates among the states in the Northeast. And only Vermont is really comparable, Vermont and Maine, to the United States in general. So we in the Northeast have somewhat of a lower firearm death rate than the rest of the country. So this is adding the death data and putting on top of it the inpatient hospitalization rates for the Northeast states. And you can see what jumps up here is that some of the more urban states, New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Connecticut, those hospital rates are much higher than the other states. And so you can see the rates start getting up there, and for the urban states, it's more the inpatient hospitalizations, and for the rural states, it's the deaths, and we'll take a look at that in a little bit. So on this one, we've added on top of that ED rates, and ED rates for the U.S. is in yellow because the ED hospitalization combined rates are not directly comparable to state data, just by the fact they don't actually collect hospitalization data, case level. So if we look here, a similar thing going on, Connecticut, New Jersey, New York, and Massachusetts has some of the higher, Rhode Island has some of the higher ED rates. Those are the ones on top in green. And so similar sort of outcome. And if we look at the rates, 5-year injury rates, fatal and non-fatal, all intents in the Northeast, just a little map of them, the rates, you can see that the blue ones, New York, Connecticut, New Jersey, have the highest rates. Vermont's high, and then some of the others. But if you pull out the differences, the overall injury rates in these states, we're looking at driven by non-fatal firearm injuries, where the death rates in the higher are in the more rural states. So the map on the, I can't see it too well, I can't see it on this screen either. The map on the left is firearm injury rates non-fatal. And the same map as the last one, we can see the New York, Connecticut, New Jersey being the highest three. And on the right is 5-year fatal injury death rates. And Vermont and Maine have the two highest death rates. So if we look at just the looking at the firearm death rates and looking at suicides and homicides, the red or the top bar is the suicide, and the blue bar is the homicide. And what certainly stands out is those rural states, again, Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, having the highest suicide rates. If you look at the blue bar, which is the lower portion, you can see the homicide rates are highest in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut. And this is a map of the 5-year firearm suicide death rates, just to give you a visual of that. Again, so the dark red will be the highest rates. Sorry that you can't, at least I can't see that well. But Maine has a 7.6 per 100,000 suicide rate, Vermont a 9.0 suicide rate due to firearms, and the lower states are New Jersey at 2.0, Massachusetts at 1.7. New York at 2.3. And so this map is of the 5-year firearm homicide death rates in the Northeast. And the highest is New Jersey at 3.0 per 100,000. And then New York at 2.5, Connecticut at 2.4. Massachusetts and Rhode Island. So most gun crimes are not necessarily likely committed with a legal firearm nor by trained shooters is sort of one of the take-home messages that some of the researchers are interested in and looking at. There's a 5-year annual unintentional and assault-related firearm injury rate. So we're not looking at all the rates. We're just looking at the ones where we actually have data to look at. Some of the states have almost no data, so we're not pulling all the data. For instance, legal intent are not displayed in either the last one or this one, just due to the fact there's not a lot of data. So this looks at the blue line, which is the bar on the left to you all, which is the assaults, and the green one, which on the right is unintentional firearm injury hospitalizations. And again, with assaults, we see New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, all pretty high, much higher than the more rural states. And the unintentional firearm injury hospitalization rates are lower and higher in a couple states. Connecticut seems to be kind of high, New York, New Jersey. So this is the 5-year annual unintentional, again the same, but this is ED data. So this is emergency department visits, so unintentional and assault related firearm rates in the Northeast. And the one on the left, the blue is the assault, and the green is the unintentional. For the most part, it's similar, except you see unintentional ED rates are higher in Connecticut, New Hampshire, New Jersey, whereas the assaults are higher in New York, Rhode Island. It's just sort of a mixed bag between the states. The ones without a bar just means the data is not enough to display. This is a slide about demographics. All right, so I'm sure that this one's even harder for you all to see, and hopefully you can see it. But I'll see what I can do to work you through it. So this is firearm homicide rates, 5-year annual average by race and ethnicity in our states, the Northeast states. The blue, so I'll start with the one on the left. The blue bars are black non-Hispanic. The red bar, which is the one in the middle, is white non-Hispanic. And the green bar, which is the one on the right, is Hispanic. And if you look at this right across the board, for the most part, not all, black non-Hispanic has the highest homicide rates. New Jersey, with a 6.6 per 100,000, really sort of leads away, is not the right word. Connecticut, Massachusetts, pretty high on their rates. Vermont, there's no data for black non-Hispanic or Hispanic, so sort of just the white non-Hispanic is there. And the bars on the right side are homicide rate ratios of black non-Hispanics to white non-Hispanics and Hispanics to white non-Hispanics. The blue bar is the black non-Hispanic to white non-Hispanic ratio, and you can see the black non-Hispanics other than Rhode Island are much higher than the white non-Hispanic rates. And they're all higher. They're all higher. And Hispanic to white non-Hispanic, is also higher in all the states where there's data to look at. And you can see, particularly in some of them, are particularly a big difference, 34.5, 27, 27.7. are the ratios between the two rates. Hispanic has pretty high in Rhode Island, and not as high in other states, but still higher than the white non-Hispanic. So this is the firearm suicide rates. That was homicide, so this is suicide rates, and the similar chart where the one on the left, the black non-Hispanic, is in blue. The middle is the white non-Hispanic, and the green bar on the right is Hispanic. And if you look at all the rates, is a little different than what you see in homicide. You see, like Connecticut, the white non-Hispanic has a much higher suicide rate. In Connecticut, in New Jersey, in New York, the suicide rates are being driven by the white non-Hispanics. And again, with the bars not there, it just means we didn't have enough data to display the results. And if you look at a comparison of black non-Hispanic to white non-Hispanic, which is the blue bar on the right, and Hispanic to white non-Hispanic, which is the green bar, there's only three states for which we can really make those comparisons. And the rate ratios are all under one, they're under 0.5. So it says all the way, it's another way to display than just in the bars how much difference it is and how white non-Hispanic is really the driving force behind the suicide numbers. So this is an age, looking at the age groups of them. It's unintentional. This is unintentional firearm injury rate, ED discharge for the five-year average. And one thing that sort of stands out, if you look across, so each one of these bars are from bottom up, there's 0 to 4 in blue, 15 to 24, 0 to 14, I'm sorry, 15 to 24 in red, 25 to 44 in green, purple's 45 to 64, and the blue is those 65 and older. And you can see that the 15 to 24 has the highest rate of unintentional firearms. So these are the people that are sort of using firearms but not as experienced as older adults will be after using it, and their rates of unintentional ED rates are higher than any other age group right across the states. And this is the same chart except for suicides, and the same group, same age groupings. And here you can see the rate for 65 plus, and the suicide is pretty high in Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, the states that have the highest suicide rates. The older adults are the ones that are the highest rate due to suicide by firearm. And this is gender. Not surprisingly, the blue bar being males and the red bar being females. Males are more likely to commit suicide by firearm by a great deal. If you're looking at the rates, they're much, much higher. So this brings back one of the maps we have before, but put with the BRFS results, and we can see with the BRFS results from the earlier slide, Vermont, Maine, New Hampshire, having the highest firearm ownership, and they're also the highest proportion of suicides with firearms. This is sort of that's a nice visual comparing, you know, home ownership, having the firearm, having the mechanism available, and the higher rates of suicides. Some certain limitations, counts of resident admission treated in bordering states not included. These are just within the states in the admissions. So we suppress data, so it's challenging to do the complete picture just because some states don't have as much data as other states. Age-adjusted rates are not presented. We're using administrative databases, non-fatal data subject to coding variations within and between states, and no data on individual firearm ownership status of the victims. Future directions. Presentation and discussion of findings with the full ICPN membership in July in-person meeting. The ICPN meets several times throughout the year and a few times in person, and this will be presented to the larger group, all the people that were sort of involved in this. We'll get to see the results. Further analysis by states are needed when able will be done, and work with the Harvard Injury Control Research Center. Find ways to get this data to firearm safety instructors and other involved in firearm safety. Thank you. Questions this time? Sure. Ron?
I have one for Dr. Pennsylvania. It's excellent presentation. I really enjoyed looking at where things are at with firearms. One of the questions is in the training. this is an issue that's coming up in Pennsylvania. Do they talk about, you know, locking up your firearms when they're not in use? Because in Pennsylvania, there is a movement to ban physicians from asking the question of, when they come for a visit, do you have firearms in your house and do you lock them up? The gun rights advocates are seeing that as an infringement on their rights, and physicians are really being backed in the corner with this, and I think that's a really big public health issue in terms of you know, not being able to ask these safety questions or ask about, you know, seatbelts and things like that. That's fine, but they can't ask, they're supposedly not going to be able to ask about firearms in the house.
So
I didn't know if any other states are experiencing that right now, but it's becoming a big issue there.
I unfortunately was unable to attend that all-day training, and maybe Holly or Cindy can answer that question better. I'm not sure what they're teaching and the firearm instructor classes. Do either of you know if they're teaching? I assume they are, but
yeah,
I can't say for sure.
Yeah, so one of the things we found out at the firearm safety training is we had representation from firearm trainers from Connecticut, Massachusetts, and New Hampshire. And they obviously didn't speak for the entire state. They just spoke from their own personal experience. But there was a wide variety of content within the trainings that they're actually giving. And so that actually is what the Harvard Injury Center is coordinating other researchers in the region to actually go in and do an audit of the safety training. So they're actually getting people to sign up and take these trainings, and they have a standardized data collection tool where they're actually listening to the curriculum and, you know, participating in the class, and then checking off, did they talk about suicide risk? Did they talk about locking the ammunition away from the actual gun, and, you know, so on and so forth. And so you're right. I mean, the other thing that kind of spun out of this was that there was an all-day training at the Massachusetts Medical Society back in December. It was like the Saturday before Christmas, they had this packed auditorium from people from all over the country, basically. They were able to get people from representation from the NRA, firearm safety instructors, physicians, and a lot of what you're talking about, you know, the fact that pediatricians have been, had their hands tied in several states because of legislation that has been passed, banning or asking them. But they walked us through the nuances of the legislation, and it's not all necessarily bad, but there are ways around it, and I don't know, Cindy, if you want to comment. Oh, you didn't attend. Yeah. But I can put you in touch with somebody who is following that legislation around the country fairly carefully, if you want.
Sure.
So that if I can address that, I'm Gary Wheeler, and I'm with the American Academy of Pediatrics and from Arkansas. So I'm in one of the states, many of the states that have, this issue has come up. Originally came up in Florida, and it was challenged in court by the American Academy of Pediatrics, and it was initially thrown out. It was appealed. The appeal court sort of split off, and it's going up further. We should be hearing about it shortly. But basically on the infringement of First Amendment rights issues. It is driven by the NRA. That's who got it on the ballot in Florida, and it's getting it on the ballot in other places, and it's a big issue. The way that people are kind of going around that, there's a sort of a grassroots group called Mothers Demand Action, and they've been trying to get people at a grassroots level to ask, at least on the children's side, that if your child is going to somebody's house, that you ask them if they have guns locked up in it. And they've actually designated Father's Day, which is this Sunday, as the time to promote this activity. So that's something folks in here may want to follow up on. The Academy is tracking this. Katie Crumley and the Division of State Government Affairs at the American Academy of Pediatrics is a person to contact if there's anyone in here that wants to keep up with that legislation.
Right.
What's going on in court?
John?
Yeah, Michael,
So I get done with this and I look at your slides and I go, boy, New York is an assaultive place. It seemed like the rates are higher. But part of that is you use crude rates, and you also showed some data that suggested, you know, that there's a difference in age distribution. I wonder if conclusions might change if you had shown age-adjusted rates.
I doubt it.
You think the conclusions would be pretty much the same?
We didn't show them. It was one of our limitations, but I don't think there's going to be much difference in New York's assault rates are still going to be high. I don't think it's going to change the overall. It might change some of the numbers, but I don't think it's going to change the overall
conclusions. Yeah. So now one of the things I was struck with the New York and after looking at our Minnesota data, in the ED, usually, you know, when you look at deaths, it's suicides, which your data mm-hmm. showed, you know, and that's great. And when you look at the hospitalized, it's assaultive. And when you look at the ED, you know, in my experience in looking at Minnesota's data, the plurality at least has been unintentional. And I looked at New York, and I go, wow, look at the assault, even in the ED, is, you know, kind of the highest. I was really struck by, you know, kind of by that piece. And it shows kind of the difference in gun culture between these different states
mm-hmm.
in how firearms are being used.
Yeah.
And one comment. The one slide that you showed, the proportion of households with a firearm,
mm-hmm.
and then the second column showed percentage of suicides due to guns.
Second was percentage of households with firearms. The map, maybe I'm looking, the map was the suicide.
But there were two, in the chart you had two columns. One showed percent of households with a firearm from the Burpas data.
Oh, right.
And the second column was percent.
You're right.
And the second column was percent of suicides with a firearm.
Yep.
So I would, just as a thing, and I'm thinking back to David Hemingway's analysis, showing that suicides are not necessarily substitutionary. When you take away a firearm, I put the firearm rate in that column, just so that someone might not misuse it. Because there's this notion out there that if people doesn't use one method to do a suicide, they'll pick another method to do a suicide. And that's not true. Mm-hmm. And David Hemingway has shown that in his research, but someone could misuse that kind of thing. So
sure.
And just one other question. You had data on intentional injury in the 15 to 24 age injury that was very high. And I don't know if legislation is going around, state legislatures is open carry or concealed carry on college campuses. I don't know if that's happening in New England. It's certainly happening in the South.
Not New York.
Have you been able to utilize any of this data to share or impact any of those kind of legislative discussions?
Some states probably. I know in New York we have strong gun laws, so I don't know if I'm so worried about that in New York. So I don't know. Other states may.
Then actually, one full presentation, and I wasn't curious. It would be interesting to see a little more depth for statewide policy gun laws in place. I know too we've had some recent legislative changes, and there was good intent, but some of those policies, such as the background checking, has limited efficacy and mm-hmm. impact. And it would be an interesting note to show, just out of curiosity, different policies that are in place with the different states, and really ask that broader question: is another step in part of what policies are potentially making an impact, and if that can be done by looking at things to create.
That's a good point. It would be interesting.